Hello and welcome to Live from the Festival on BCB 106.6 FM, coming to you from the Bradford Literature Festival Hub here in City Park. I'm Maureen Grant and
I'm Kath Webber, and we'll be with you for the next 30 minutes bringing you all the Literature Festival news, reviews and interviews.
On today's programme we'll be hearing from Munira Mandoka about the leather craft workshop that she's running tomorrow, and Rana Safi will be telling us about the three events that she's part of over the weekend, starting with tonight's event, England, Mughal in India and the Origins of Empire. And our final guest will be the
Festival Director, Saima Aslam, who will be giving us her thoughts on the festival so far. But first, let's have a quick chat about the festival today. I've been to a really interesting talk this lunchtime. I don't know whether you've been busy yet, Maureen, with festival events today. I went to Twins, which was Nick Topchek's conversation based on his film about his father and his father's twin brother and their life journey, really, from Germany as Jewish twins in their teenage years to Bradford, and then the wartime years, and all of those stories. Absolutely fascinating.
That sounds super interesting. I mean, I would have liked to go, but I was doing all the BCB things.
We can't be everywhere. And I think, as we said earlier when we were chatting, there's just so much richness in this festival this year, as always. So much choice, and you just have to go for the one thing that catches your eye first.
Yep. And but later on we'll be hopefully catching up with some other things that we've been interested in or interesting for the weekend.
Yes,
because
looking ahead.
There is still only 2 days left, but still much, much more to come.
Absolutely. There's plenty to look at, isn't there, over the next couple of days.
Yeah, but for now we're really delighted to welcome Rana Safi.
Thank you so much.
And you'll be... Yes, and we would really like to hear more about your work here and what you'll be doing at the festival. Three things to talk about. This feels like a treat.
This is my first opportunity to come to Bradford, and I really love the way it's been organized. And I'm speaking in three events. The first event is on England, Mughal Empire and India. So on that I will be speaking on the Sufi mystical aspect of the Mughal Empire. Uh-huh. And after that I have a session on my book called In Search of the Divine, Living Histories of Sufism in India, where I will be talking of what Sufism is and whether it is, because I believe it is not, why it is believed that it is different from Islam, when it is actually an integral part of it. And I'll be talking about that. I'll be talking about different shrines in India and how devotees interact with those shrines. And then my last session is on cooking. It's the forgotten food and memories, culinary memories, and how culinary memories are attached to a feeling of comfort and a feeling of, you know, like nostalgia. Every time you feel nostalgic, you want to eat some particular food that your mother, grandmother or somebody may have made for you. How migrants use food as a way to establish themselves in a new environment.
Can I just say, it's the variety of what you're doing is remarkable, but it all seems to hinge on experiences of heritage and history.
So that's the area I work in. I document tangible and intangible heritage. I've so far limited myself to India, but maybe I will see if I can go and do something internationally also.
Well, you've got the opportunity this year. I understand you've been in Sheffield already at a festival there, and now you're with us in Bradford, which is fantastic. You say that this is what you've focused on. Is this in an academic sense? Is this in a kind of community arts sense? What fields have you been working in?
What I write is called narrative popular history these days. So this is for the general public, the lay person who may or may not have studied history in their college or in school, may not have paid too much attention to history. So I put it out as easily and as simply as possible for everybody to absorb.
So accessibility. And inspiring interest amongst the general population is really important.
Yes, accessibility, and I'm very active also on social media, where I try to give as much information as possible about, as I said, the tangible and intangible heritage of India.
Fantastic. It sounds like it's going to be a really interesting conversation. And you're going to be talking with Professor Nandini Das this evening.
Yes.
In that conversation.
Yeah, Professor Nandini Das has just written a book called Courting India, which talks about the first embassy of, say, King James, the first Sir Thomas Rowe, that went to the court of Emperor Jahangir.
So looking at empire from way back when, at the very beginnings of those empire links between England, the United Kingdom, and the Indian subcontinent.
And there was so much of exchange, not only of trade, but even of artistic ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that interplay, that to and fro, which we see so much evidence of in the UK today, and of course in India as well. And then you're going to be talking about Sufi tradition and explaining that to the audience.
So, as I said, Sufism is a very integral part of Islam. And how does a devotee express himself? That's the main thing of my book, that how does anybody interact with the shrine? And where different, you know, like there are many shrines in India, and I visited over 100 of them all over India in about 4 years. So, every devotee has a very particular wish that they come to a shrine for. Like particular shrine, they may come for children, to pray for their children or to pray for children. Some people come to shrines, you know, for a common belief in India is the evil eye. So to get rid of the evil eye or to, you know, so
they seek protection.
Yes, seek protection for that, or just, you know, like pray for prosperity. So every particular saint has some kind of miracle attached to them, and that it is that miracle that devotees feel can help them access God through the intercession of this particular saint. So it's not as if anybody is praying to the saint, it's they're praying to God, but they're asking the saint to intervene and use his good offices to further their wishes.
And I assume some of those connections are family connections, so that a family would have a tradition with a particular shrine.
Yes, that's there. Every family has a shrine, and in the beautiful part of India is that it's not limited to only Muslims. People of all faith, all class, all different religions, they all go there, different cultures in different parts of India, and that is what makes it very syncretic and very pluralistic, and you know, a very integral part of our lives.
So that conversation is happening, I think, over the weekend. I'm just looking at the brochure. this large brochure on Sunday.
On Sunday.
And then the other really interesting event, which I think we both would love to go to, Maureen, because it involves food. Again, you're working with a couple of other practitioners in this, delivering this this session.
So this is a project of University of Sheffield called Forgotten Foods, where we talk about culinary memories and how culinary memories are related to migration and to, you know, like why is it important to preserve heirloom recipes? Because nowadays there is not enough time for us to be preparing those heirloom recipes, yet we try to preserve them and prepare them for festivals.
And it's really interesting, so soon after Refugee Week, to be thinking about the power for migrant communities of those heritage foods and the family memories and the skills and, as you say, the recipes. And you're actually going to be bringing some actual food to the table for that event.
Yes, we are. We are preparing. I'll be there with Professor Shoban Lambert Hurley and Farai Yami. And they are the ones who are going to do the cooking. I'll do the talking and the eating.
Are we going to get any surprises in terms of, you know, the tie, you know, bringing something that's way back from when to now?
I think we'll let that be a surprise.
Okay.
Let them, they will be coming, and then we'll let that be a surprise package for the audience. And I hope everybody does come for it, sign up for this event.
Well, I think we're very lucky to have you with us in Bradford. You were telling us earlier that you're involved in festivals of this kind around India, but that this summer is the first time you've actually come to an international festival, and this is the second one because you were at the Sheffield Festival too. And you said that one was mostly about migration?
The Sheffield Festival was the Migration Festival. It wasn't a literature festival, so we talked about how food and culinary memories are very important for migrants, and how it can also become a commercial venture for them. not just comfort, but gives them, you know, like food on the table as well.
Yeah, there have been stories, I think, over the last couple of years of people who've done exactly that. People who've come to make their home in the UK and have used their culinary skills and their heritage of particular foods as a real way of starting a business, and also training others in their community to deliver in the same kind of way.
And, you know, like so many festivals, like yesterday was, day before, was Eid. So there are, you know, like we have two Eids, and each Eid is associated with a different kind of dish. So the first Eid that is after Ramzan is called the sweet Eid, where sweets are made. And this is the Bakrid, where it's Eid of sacrifice. So you have a lot of meat dishes being prepared. So, yes, so, you know, like we like to preserve. I want to preserve the special recipes that I have passed on to me from my parents and grandparents and pass them on to my children. And hopefully grandchildren, inshallah.
And of course, food is a very unifying thing in terms of how communities actually come together, usually over a meal, or you know, or at least talking about food. So that's so you know, I think food is so important.
It's very important. You know, like when we were growing up, it was compulsory. We all had to be at the dining table. And it was said that families that eat together stay together. So, and you know, like there was so many the things that we had to, rules for the dining table, the etiquette of eating, that we don't talk shop, we don't talk business. We only talk of, you know, like culture or whatever is happening in the family and find out what each member has been doing or any way we can help or something like that. You know, like community, the...
lives shared around the table and those connections made and kept strong. Well, it's been brilliant talking to you. Thank you so much for visiting Bradford, for being part of the festival and for talking to us this evening.
Thank you so much for inviting me for this. It was wonderful. Thank you so much and I hope to see you later on.
Well, I'm sorry I can't fit that one into to the weekend, but it sounds like it's going to be a very special event.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic.
And we're lucky also to have with us this evening another contributor to the festival, Manera Mendoza, who's visiting us from Granada in Spain, and has brought with her skills of leatherwork, which I've seen a very small sample of this evening. Welcome, Manera.
Thank you very much. It's an honour to be here.
We're very pleased to have you, and I understand what you're going to be doing is delivering workshops over this weekend.
Yes, I call them caster workshops, which are like 2.5 hours. So we do a bit of tooling, which was very typical of especially Granada and Cordoba.
And your home at the moment, well, now, as of the last 40 plus years, you were telling us, is Granada.
Yeah.
And the skills that you have learnt and that you are now sharing with others are very typical of that part of Spain, am I right?
Yes, it all began in Cordoba, and then every city in southern Spain has its own variation. And my teacher was the last one of Granada.
So you were taught by a real specialist, a master.
Yes, he was a master, yes.
So what kinds of things people can expect when they get to the workshop in terms of having to do, you know?
I think people have a lot of fun because we work on pieces that are 20 by 20. I've brought some templates for the drawings, which are from the Alhambra, like tile work from the Alhambra. And we do tooling with a hammer and metal tools. And then we do a dyeing technique as well.
So you'll have to explain to me tooling.
Tooling is, we use a hammer and then little tools which on one end have different designs, and then you stamp them in.
Kind of embossing.
Okay, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah,
because I've never even thought of this as a creative artwork, you know, in my own kind of experience. So it feels as though, you know, this would be something quite new for me if I did try it. And I'm sure lots of people would be, and you know, encouraged to
absolutely
play something like this.
And you say you've brought designs with you.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about those? Because I understand that they come from a very special kind of inspiration.
A lot of my work is based on inspiration from the Alhambra, the Alhambra Palace in Granada. Yeah. And so what I'm bringing is two different, the pictures are two different tiles from the Alhambra.
Mm-hmm. I imagine some of our listeners will have visited that very special place and understand exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
Have you been there, Maureen?
I've been there,
I have as well. It is a very,
so
very special location.
So, beautiful.
There'll be a couple of different designs for people to work from.
Yes.
And a piece of leather which is prepared, and then they'll start to build the design on that.
Exactly. First we do practice. We practice to get the coordination of the hammer and the tool. That takes, so we have a few minutes of practice. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, the templates, I've traced them all. So we trace them on the piece of leather. And then
they will follow those lines.
Yeah.
And
yes,
I guess they'll have to get the kind of the amount of pressure that they're using will have to be correct to get the kind of depth that they're looking for.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
When you've created design, if you're working in this way, you can then colour it. Is that right?
Yes. We would just be doing, which was very typical, dark and light. Mm-hmm. Like we will be using it would just be a beige colour and then a darker brown.
Achieved by putting an oil on?
By putting a type of varnish.
Okay.
Right, and then I dye it. Mm-hmm. They don't. I just, with a brush, I dye it and then wipe it off. And then we have to put a protective coat on as well.
So that the colour
It doesn't fade.
Oh, okay.
And it also protects it if you want to use it for a hot plate or hang it or whatever. Yeah.
So they will actually be taking something away with them that they've worked on with you. Do you say it's a two-hour workshop? Is that
it's about two and a half.
Two and a half hours.
Which I'm cutting it down. When I do it at home, it's like three.
Okay, so they're going to have to work at pace on this task.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And as you're working, will you talk at all about the origins of the design or your kind of journey to this?
Yes, I give a little introduction, especially about Islamic art and the importance of it, and especially the leather. Mm-hmm. And then I go talking and people ask questions, and it's very interactive.
Mm. And is this something that you deliver in Granada?
Yes.
Regularly, this is part of your regular practice?
Yes, especially now. We had a shop before, and a very big workshop, and of course that all changed with COVID. And I do dedicate myself to teaching, and
And you say that you used to have the big workshop. Has that begun to re-establish itself?
Well, my son works with me.
Okay.
So he's moved to Seville, and so the major part of the workshop is in Seville.
I see.
But then the hand tooling and everything, I have a studio in my home, and I continue.
Okay. And do you find time amongst this to do your own creative pieces, larger pieces?
Yes. And then I do use colors, and I use different types of colors. There's leather paint. There's also, I use acrylics. Yeah, I do get into color, but the typical of Granada was the dark and the
just
light.
Just the two contrasting effects.
Yeah.
And presumably some of the stuff that's produced in the workshop for sale is small items that people can buy and take, I don't know, purses, bags, that kind of thing? Or is it all decorative? And
no, we have handbags, wallets, endless keychains,
belts, anything that can be made from leather and then decorated.
And also in the website, what we've done, so many people have asked, because I always in my shop work with local artisans,
right?
Mm-hmm. Very special pieces, and people are asking for that. So you'll find on the website a lot of things that aren't leather, such as jewelry and ceramic, and all people that I work with in the shop.
So it's a bringing together of other creatives. It's not just the leather work. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
That's really good. And have you done work like this at other festivals? Have you taken your expertise and your skill?
I've done quite a few retreats, because retreats are kind of the fashion
now. They really are.
And so I have been asked to participate in different retreats.
Mm-hmm.
So
would those be available on your website if people look at your website and see what's...
No,
found through other connections in other ways.
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful to be able to share your skill in that way.
Remind us, when is the workshop?
So tomorrow at 11 is the first one, and there's one 45 minutes after. I do two tomorrow, and then two on Sunday.
Right, and the location?
I think they're sold out.
Ah, sold out already. There's probably a waiting list. Well, that's fantastic. It's great to know that they've been picked up and that the, the participants in the festival are interested in getting involved in the
race. Maybe I come next year.
Well, if it goes well, we'll absolutely come back and we'll have more. That would be great, wouldn't it? That'd be really good. Yeah. And it's good to have some real practical stuff amongst all the words and the conversations, isn't it? Valuable and important though they all are. Mm-hmm. It's really lovely to have that that opportunity. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Munira, for coming and talking to us
this
evening. All the best with whatever you do with the rest of the weekend, including your own workshops.
Okay,
but I know you're hoping to tap into some other events as well, which is great.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Hope to see you next year.
Yes. Yeah.
Safe travels.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Well, what an exciting opportunity that will be for people to tap into those workshops.
You know, I've never really thought of doing something like that, but listening to that, it makes me, because what really connects it is that it's not just network, it's how it connects to the culture of
absolutely.
The place.
Absolutely, the designs.
And it brings the designs and the, you know. So I think that would be, you know, super interesting. I think a lot of people here would have had, you know, either heard stories or gone themselves to Granada and seen some of those things and will be super interested.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what's really drawn me to thinking that's something that I would like to.
Yeah, so when she comes next year, you'll put that on the list of things that you want to do.
Exactly.
That's really good. Well, I'm sure both of us are looking at things over the weekend to do. But one of the things that I'm going to do this evening is go to the Richard Thompson conversation. We've got Richard Thompson in town. He's coming to talk about what music making has meant to him, really, and how he's over many years been involved in writing and making music with some really big names. So that'll be good.
Yeah,
really
that
interesting
good,
to
that
do.
That sounds very interesting. I think that I'm looking forward to a range of things next week. Both tomorrow and Sunday.
Over the weekend,
Over the weekend, yes. And there's one that's really probably out there, which is about looking at how the media reports on war. John Pilger is doing something on that. So,
name, isn't he? Yes.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't sound super exciting, but I think it will be really interesting in terms of how we absorb things, propaganda and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, from a media point of view, I think that would be a really interesting and the thing to explore.
Yeah, and he's someone who's been doing that work for such a long time in lots of different parts of the world and drawing, as you say, people's attention to what the media's doing and how it's presenting us with those stories. And of course, there are at any one time, but particularly at the moment, there seem to be a lot of stories like that in various parts of the world that are that really draw our attention, and that it's not always easy to know kind of what the truth is. So that would be really interesting.
And exactly how they are able to tell that truth, basically, because I think there's lots of considerations about how you can interpret things and what's good, what's okay to put out there for the public to see, sort of thing.
Yeah, and the whole question of what is truth these days is so complex, isn't it? Mm. Finding the truth and false truths and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So some good things to look forward to, and I know people have got things to reflect on as well. I think that Mary's just popped in and she's going to talk to us a little bit about what last night was like.
Last night, remember last night on last night's programme, people listening, I was going off to chair one of the sessions, and it was the session called Brother, Do You Love Me? And it was about the two brothers, Ruben and Manny Coe, and Ruben has Down syndrome and Manny is his older brother, and they shared their book which Manny wrote and Ruben illustrated about their time during COVID, and how Manny took Ruben out of the care home that he was living in because he was in complete and utter
isolation.
He'd become non-verbal, he'd lost loads of weight, he was completely undernourished, and so he sprung him out of the care home where he was living and took him to live for 6 months. They lived together during COVID in a cottage, and it was about it was a real lovely tale of joy and love, but some real dark moments. And What was so interesting, I was in Waterstones and it was absolutely jam-packed, completely full. And I think everybody in the audience had some connection to either Downs or to people with learning disabilities or to care.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And everybody was nodding. And when it came to the questions at the end, people just wanted to share their own experiences. Mm-hmm. So it really, really touched people, really touched people. And there was so much love in the room. It was lovely.
That's fantastic, that kind of empathy and reaching out. Yeah. No, that's really, really good, really mm-hmm. important. Mm-hmm. I found that actually with quite a lot of things. I've been to several things that have been an opportunity for people in the audience to share their life experience. Tim Smith speaking about Ukraine mm-hmm. and people in the audience who've got those kind of experiences. Today, Nick Tokchek talking about his parents who came to Bradford ended up coming here as refugees and had a very complex journey, but they came back to Bradford as young adults and settled here. And there were people again in the audience with family stories, not necessarily German-Jewish stories, but similar parallel stories of movement. And I think that whole strand of migration and movement and community and belonging has been a really, really strong strain of this year's festival. Yeah. I seem to have picked out things that echoed that, but I think it was very much there in the programming as well.
Yeah, and of course it's very timely now.
Absolutely.
In terms of movements of people and who has the right to come and stay or not, and all of that. So
and with the Windrush anniversary again, all of these huge, huge events really in the life of this country and in the life of the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I think what's been so great about the festival is it's made space for all those stories to be told and those voices to be heard.
Yes.
I know it's 6 o'clock tonight, there's a Roma event as well, and there's just it just feels like increasingly every community and every kind of way that people identify, there's a space for everybody and for that, for their story and their voice to be heard.
Finding a platform, finding a stage, I think you're absolutely right. I went to an event last night at the Impressions Gallery at which three actually, there were a filmmaker and a poet made one film, and then a young Bradfordian had made another film, very much about being of Asian origin, Asian heritage in the UK, very much in Bradford in one case, not quite so strongly just Bradford in the other, but very thought-provoking and powerful. Dear Bradford was the film that closed the evening, really, and real testament to what this city offers to people. I know it's not straightforward. I know there are issues and difficulties and not everybody finds open arms, but I think it is a pretty special place. And I know Nick Tokchek said that when he was speaking, that he felt it really was. We are a city of sanctuary and I think we do a lot of things in the right kind of way.
And we always have done. I think that's what's so interesting is that then we sometimes don't recognise what a strength that is to have welcomed people. And I know it's not been easy for everybody when they go. Let's not, most tinted glasses.
No,
but as a city, we have kind of embraced people coming in.
I think one of the things that as a city we've been able to do, we had, because we've got such a rich mix of people, we had no choice but to kind of like face some of those challenges head on. And I'm not saying that they're resolved altogether, but what I'm saying is that we talk about it and we can talk about it. We have a voice to talk about it. And I think that's missing in a lot of places. And I think that richness of community is really felt in Bradford. It's really reflected in this festival.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I've been here since 88, and I think what I'm aware of is that there are people who've been here from other places or from this city and have kept that message and that work going decade after decade after decade.
Yes.
And I think that's something to be really proud of as a city.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've just got 1 minute of this programme to go, 1 minute of our coverage from the festival. Anything, any ways we're going to sum it up?
I think chances to share stories is probably what I would say. That's been the thing that I've heard and listened to and enjoyed. Storytelling.
Well, I think it's just an opportunity to kind of hear from people you don't really, you hear, but you don't really listen to. And it's just given that opportunity to sit in a space and hear from people who might be given a little bit more of themselves that you would not normally get. And I think for me, that's been like really exciting,
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to all the things I have planned for next and Sunday.
That's great. That's really good. Yeah.
I think it's just great that all these people are coming to Bradford and looking at Bradford and experiencing Bradford, and we can say this is Bradford.
Absolutely, yes. This is Bradford, a surprising place.
And that's it.
Thank you so much.
So we better say goodbye.
We better have goodbye from Kath Webber.
Yes, and this is goodbye from Maureen Grant.
I'm Mary Dowson. Thank you so much for listening.